Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, second wave, Sadhana Bhakti, first division, verse number 30. This is from now, verse 30 to 54. Rupa Goswami is explaining how the pure devotees of the Lord, they're feeling so much satisfaction from serving Krishna, that even if the Lord personally offers them liberation, one of the five types of liberation, they refuse to accept it, because they're feeling so much satisfaction simply by serving the Lord. The only exception to this is if the Lord requests them to offer some liberation combined with service. He said, yes, please come to the spiritual world. I want you to serve me. Then a devotee will gladly go to serve the Lord in the spiritual world. So he's, Rupa Goswami is citing a series of verses, 26 verses, from the Bhagavatam to explain from this way to that way to this way, how the devotees are not interested in Sarupya Mukti, they're not interested in Salokya Mukti, they're definitely not interested in Suyuja Mukti or merging with the Lord's effulgence. And always comes back, we just want to serve you, we just want to serve you, we just want to serve you. So Jiva Goswami, in this verse we read yesterday, Prita Maharaj, was saying that the only benediction I want is the 1,000,000 years. Prita Maharaj wanted a blessing that the Lord would give him, grant him 1,000,000 years so they could hear about the glories of Krishna's lotus feet from the mouths of pure devotees. Because that's also seva, shravana dasha. Hearing from the devotees about the Lord is also seva. Lending our ears to the Lord. Now Jiva Goswami, he explains, he gives a, his commentary is a conversation, and so is Vishwanath. Jiva's conversation is rather small. The devotee says to the Lord, I don't want bliss from merging into your Brahman effulgence. Because there is no happiness from hearing about you or about your qualities and the honey of your lotus feet. And then the Lord replies to the devotee, then what do you desire? The devotee says, my wish is that you give me 10,000 ears to hear your glories. Now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he follows the lead of Jiva Goswami in his tika and gives this conversational mode between the Lord and the devotee. The devotee says, my Lord, I don't desire to merge into Brahman at any time at all, since it brings about sorrow. Why is that? The Lord says, by merging in Brahman, there is no nectar of your lotus feet, the wealth of sweetness in hearing about your qualities. Then the Lord hears, oh, you say there is some nectar and sweetness in my qualities? What type of nectar is this? And then the devotee says, it arises from the heart of the great devotee and exits from his mouth. This is now verse is given, the Vishnathika's commentary. The nectar is glorified in this way because it cannot be relished while it is still inside the devotee. It's interesting. It's like if the nectar is still inside the bottle, or the wine is in the bottle, you can't relish it. You can see the form of nectar. It's in the, liquor. It's in the wine bottle. But until you open the bottle and drink it, you can't perceive the effect of that, not exactly nectar. But so the devotee, he is the repository, he is the reservoir of nectar, nectar store. And when he speaks, then the nectar comes out. So out of great bliss, in this verse, Prithu glorifies the nectar when it emerges, because then other devotees can relish it. Or he says he can relish it. There's a similar expression in First Canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 1, verse 3, where it's talking about Nigama Kalpaturo. And then the second line says, Shuka Mukad Amrita Dravya Samyuta. This dravya, this thing or this substance called nectar, it emanated from the mouth, this nectarian fruit, the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature, of the desire-fulfilling tree of the Vedic literature. All the Vedas fulfill desires, but nothing can fill desires like the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this Srimad Bhagavatam fulfills the desire of all desires, the origin of all desires. So now, Vishwanath says, by my tasting it, I can understand the sweetness of this Harikatha. One should also understand the opposite condition. Just as sweet water becomes distasteful when it's mixed with salty earth, the qualities of the Lord become distasteful when emanating from the mouth of a non-devotee. And the Lord interjects. Now, what do you desire? Devotee says. Because of the infinite number of devotee talks about the qualities of the Lord, many devotees in many places are speaking in glorification of the Lord. I cannot reject even one of these talks. Out of great greed, I have a desire for an infinite number of ears. It's very interesting that, especially here, for example, in Kartik, there are many classes going on in Harikatha and of different quality and level. And many of them are going on simultaneously in different mandirs. And 3 o'clock, there's Chaitanya Charitamrita class here, and also at 3 o'clock, there's Bhakti Sandharva class over there, and at 3 o'clock, there's Radharasa. It's like there's many classes. Then the devotees have to think, oh, which pot of nectar should I drink? Should I drink this nectar or that nectar or this nectar? So they have to make selection. So Vishwanath is telling that I don't want to select. I want to be in all places at the same time. I want my ears to be everywhere. I want to collect the nectar from every source. I want to collect the nectar and hear the nectar from the mouth of every devotee wherever he is speaking Harikatha. Therefore, I'm asking you, I desire, my Lord, an infinite number of ears, unlimited ears, so I can be everywhere. Of course, this is a characteristic of Bhagavan, told in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvato Panipadam Tat Sarvato Kshikshiroma Mukham. He's telling about how everywhere his hands and faces, eyes and mouths, he sees everything, hears everything, because of Paramatma. But here the devotee is asking, doesn't want to be that all-pervading, but he wants to have his ears wherever the nectar is flowing from the mouth of a devotee, Shukamakad Amritam, Dravya Amritam. Wherever that mouth is speaking, and that mouth of that devotee is representing Shukadev Goswami and his Harikatha, Brajakatha, Radhakrishna, Premkatha, then devotee wants his ears to be there to collect it. So then the Lord says, does anyone ever ask for such a thing? And then devotee replies, well, my Lord, true, it's an impossibility, but this is my wish, and I don't have any other wish. And that's how Vishwanath ends his purport. So you have to tune in next life, or whenever Vishwanath comes back and writes the epilogue. The question is, did the Lord grant the thousands of years, or did he not? So this is text 31. This is Shukadeva Goswami is speaking. Lo and behold, fifth canto, this is the verse Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, chapter 14, verse 44. Yo dustyajan shitisuta swajanarta dharan pratyam shriyam suravare sariyavalokam naichanripastaruchitam mahatam maduvit sevanaraktamanasam abhavopi falgu. In this particular verse, Shukadeva Goswami is glorifying the extreme renunciation of the famous King Bharat. King Bharat gave up everything that was difficult for others to give up. Now, what are those things? He gave up his kingdom. Well, that's easy. One can give up kingdoms. But then he gave up his wife. Usually people can give up money, but they can't give up love. Love is very hard to give up. Maharaj Bharat, King Bharat, he gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family. And then one might say, well, that's not a big deal. If I give up my kingdom, it's just I live inside this drain pipe. And on the side of the road, I live inside this cement drain pipe, abandoned pipe. So if I give up my kingdom of my drain pipe, it's not a big thing. So then someone might say, what's the big deal? He gave up his kingdom. I ran away from my wife and kids. I gave up my kingdom. Joined the Hare Krishna temple. But he's saying, oh, but you don't know. The opulence of his kingdom was so great that even the demigods were envious of the extent of Bharat's opulence. So that's more than a drain pipe. That's fabulous wealth. Yet he gave up that wealth endowed with attractive glances. It was quite befitting for great devotees whose minds are attracted to the service of Madhusudan. Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant for those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord. So in so many verses from Bhagavatam, because this is the Amala Gyanam, this Bhagavat Purana's Amala Gyan, it is pure knowledge and is perfect praman, at least for we accept it as such. And verse after verse, as I mentioned, for something like 28 verses, he's describing this devotee, whether he was a sage or a rishi or a king, whatever his position was, he was a boy, Dhruva Maharaj, whether you're 5 years old, Dhruva Maharaj, he was offered liberation. He said, no, I'm happy to have your darshan. Or whether you're 24 years old and you're a king, or whether you're a little boy standing in the forest of Madhavan, or you're Maharaj Bharat, a 24-year-old king in the prime of youth, standing in the middle of an empire that extended all over the world. Either way, it's insignificant. It's tuchavat. It's simple. Simply, it's easy to leave all that and give up even the offering of liberation if one is relishing the nectar of serving the Lord. So this is the son of Rishabhadev in the fifth canto, Maharaj Bharat. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, it's very interesting. In general, the tenor of Vishnu Chakravarti's purports is very personal. He makes everything sweet. If you read his Bhagavad Gita commentary, by Vishnu Chakravarti, it's in English, and Gaudiya Math has published it. And you see there's all these dialogues within dialogues. The Bhagavad Gita itself is basically a conversation. Sometimes it's said the Bhagavad Gita took place in a half hour on the battlefield. Although on Moksha Ekadasi, when we chant the Sanskrit slokas, it takes 2 hours. But somehow they say the conversation was quite brief. Krishna instructed and incited and inspired Arjuna to pick up his bow Gandiva and act as a proper Kshatriya to uphold the principles of Dharma and vanquish the miscreants, headed by his cousin brother Duryodhan. But within that conversation of questions and answers of 700 verses, Vishnu Chakravarti, he imagines or he heard or he saw in Spurti a rather extensive conversation that went on for thousands and thousands of verses. If you read the commentaries, it's like you can say a conversation within a conversation. So it's the basic verses of Gita. Arjuna reveals his despondency and his hesitancy to fight, and then Krishna speaks to him to allay his fears and to remove his illusion, ignorance, and asks him, are your doubts removed? And he says, yes, but I want to know who is better, the devotee or the Brahmavadi, the worshipper of the impersonal Brahman? And these questions and answers go on. But then Vishwanath, in almost so many verses, not all, but many verses, he says, actually, Krishna was saying like this, and Arjuna was saying like this. And there's long conversations back and forth, which in those conversations, in those commentaries of Vishwanath, he actually reveals the deep heart of Arjuna and Krishna and their interplay of divine love. That's why he's called the Rasika Acharya. it brings out the ras, because a conversation in Bhagavad Gita brings out the philosophy and something of the psychology. Of course, even they have books like that, Psychology and Gita. So, you know, all the professors are keen to analyze Gita from different aspects. But none of them can match the angle of vision of Vishwanath, being Vinod Valari Manjari, one of Radharani's intimate Sakhi Manjaris, Pran Sakhis. You know, rather, Vishwanath, he very minutely understands the movements of the devotional heart. The movements of the devotional heart can only be understood by a devotee. And being a Parishad, or eternal associate of the Lord, unlike college professors, Vishwanath has a unique perception of the heart of the Lord and the heart of the Lord's devotees. As they say in English, it takes one to know one. If you're a writer, then you understand something about what writers go through in the creative process. And one writer, he was interviewed, maybe it was James Faulkner or somebody like that, and he said, writing is 10% inspiration and 90% blood, sweat, and tears. So this is quite... Everyone thinks, oh, you're an inspired writer. Yes, I just close my eyes and write everything. So he's 10% inspiration and 90% blood, sweat, and tears. Hard work. Writing and rewriting and editing, etc. Researching, combining ideas, moving things around, reading it to friends, getting feedback, changing, rechanging. So, Vishwanath, it's such a sweet, he opens the hearts. He opens the heart of the Lord and opens the heart of the devotee in his analysis of Gita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and other Shastras, what to speak of Bhagavatam. So in this verse where Shukadev Goswami is glorifying the renunciation of Maharaj Bharat in the fifth canto, he walked out of everything. In the verse that's used is that, I mentioned this one class, that Maharaj Bharat, he left his kingdom and his family just like one passes stool. And so the commentators, they analyze this verse from Bhagavatam. Why does he say he just left or whatever? They say he walked out of his family, left his vast kingdom, wife, children, family, empire, and he walked away just like when you pass stool, you walk away. You don't turn back, you don't look back. So in the commentaries, they say that three things happen when you pass stool. You can see if I hit the mark here. One thing is that you feel happy. One thing is you feel peaceful. And the other thing is you feel relieved. So, especially if you've been constipated for 3 days, and you finally, the board of directors passes the motion, then when the motion is passed, then it's a unanimous approval, and you feel quite good after 3 days of constipation. So this is what happens when one renounces material attachments. One feels relief. One feels peaceful and feels happy. So, because these three things are experienced, and the diurnal pastime of stool passing, and I thought it was quite humorous how the acharyas, when they comment on this fifth canto verse, they say, why is Shukadeva Goswami using this analogy, passing stool? When they really get deep into the meditation on the verses, and they think, let's see, passing stool. What happens when you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you feel happy. You feel peaceful. Okay. So you can imagine how much tension, how much anxiety would be on your head if you were the emperor of the whole world. So many hundreds of queens and children and ministers. And when you walk away and it's just you and the open air and the earth under your feet and the fresh water streams and the presence of the Lord in your heart, how much relief you'll feel. It's like when someone goes hiking in the forest, or they go walking and camping out, they feel, as they say, foot loose and fancy free. There's one line from a poem. Foot loose and fancy free. Just walking, no cares in the world, just nature. I remember there was one a statement of St. Francis. He's saying that, he says the, what was he saying? The the sky is my roof, and the trees are my walls, and the earth under my feet is the floor. What need do I have for a house? You know, and the birds are my friends. The birds are my friends, and the animals are my relatives. And my Lord is my well-wishing friend wherever I go. He had some statement like this. So this is the roof, the universal house. We all live in this house. God is giving the roof of the sky. So this is the feeling of relief one feels when he takes shelter of the Lord. Peacefulness, happiness, and relief. So now Vishwanath, he comments on this verse. Wealth sends out seemingly kind glances. But now he's personified money or wealth. Wealth is he may be referring here, I'm not sure what this translation is of, but it may be Bhukti Devi. Because Mukti is a Devi. All these Vibhutis are actually personified. Vidya Devi, Bhukti Devi, they're all personified. Bhakti Devi, Mukti Devi, Bhukti Devi, Vidya Devi, Akarshani, etc. So Vidya Devi, or excuse me, Bhukti Devi, wealth, sends out seemingly kind glances. And what do these glances say? Do not renounce your palace. Don't torture your body with austerities. Stay in your house. Stay in your palace. I will take care of you. So this is money talking. Wealth. Well, why? Why go live the life of a mendicant? And go take a vow of poverty and give all your money to the Hare Krishna temple? That's not a very good idea. You should stay home. Be happy. And all these austerities, that's Mother Sachi was preaching like this to Nimai. What is this? You're going to take sannyas? Your feet are so soft that when I touch your feet, I understand they're softer than butter. How will you walk on the footpaths and the stone pathways of India and your tender feet? And who will feed you? Who will care for you? How will you just eat some wild vegetables in the forest? How will you get nourished? She was very worried when the news came that he was going to take sannyas, and they had their last conversation before he left in the early morning. Very touching scene. So wealth is speaking like this. So Vishnath says, for such devotees like Maharaj Bharat, liberation is insignificant. The devotees are entitled to liberation, but they're not attracted to it. So he's hammering the point. No, back to God. Stay home, but leave your home. Stay home, but leave your home, and take shelter of Krishna. Now there's another verse, and this is Vritrasura, the former Chitraketu, in sixth canto. So you can understand that Rupa Goswami has gone to a lot of trouble to collect these verses to present his book based on solid foundation of Bhagavat Praman, and Bhagavat Puran as his Praman. And these are all very important verses, and there's all different aspects of this concept being presented here. It's like a diamond. A diamond is cut in such a way, has many, many facets, many, many angles. And each angle, or each facet in the diamond reflects light and looks very attractive. So this presentation of 28 verses is like different facets of the diamond of Siddhanta, Hira Siddhanta, the diamond of Siddhanta. He's trying to show from different angles that this is not desirable. All the great devotees, and of course we're aspiring, all these devotees that are mentioned here, they're all our exemplars, they're our preceptors, they're our Mahajans. Vritrasura, although he's an Asura, he's also a Mahajan. Vritrasura, Shukadeva Goswami, and Dhruva Maharaj, and Kapila, and Prithu Maharaj, and all these different devotees we've been hearing, their realizations, the realizations of a boy, the realizations of a king, the realizations of a sage. So where are our realizations on this matter? So we can borrow some of we can draw mercy from these great devotees, young and old, kings and renunciates and children, and emperors, and we can beg to them, the authors of these verses, that they've experienced this. They realize this. Prithu wanted thousands of years to hear the glories of the Lord. That, needless to say, that means he's wide awake. He's not sleeping with those 10,000 years. The ears are open and his eyes are too. That's an interesting feature about the ears. They never close. They're always open. So they're very important, a very important sense. They don't take any vacation. The eyes and other senses, they take a vacation. So this verse is from Brichasuras. It's called Brichasura Upakya. Nanaka prishtam nacha parameshtyam nasarva bomam narasadi patyam na yoga siddhir apunarbhavam va samanja sattva virahaya kankshe. Brichasura stated, O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, nor the heavenly planets where Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire the perfection of Ashtanga Yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. So this is Chitraketu, who was cursed by Parvati to become Brichasura. And he's not asking for anything but remembrance of the Lord's lotus feet. So he's rejecting all these different positions in the material world. Dhruvaloka, which is the pole star, or going all the way up, Janalok, Maharlok, Tapalok, Satyalok. Even Brahmalok he doesn't have any interest in. He simply wants to serve the Lord. Now he cites a verse. The next verse is from Lord Shiva, speaking on this subject. It's a very famous verse from 6th Canto, chapter 17, verse 28. So Lord Shiva, Mahadev, he's speaking in this verse. Narayana prasarve nakutash janabibhyati swarga pavarga narakesh vapi tulyarta darshinaha. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of Narayan never fear any condition of life. For them, heavenly planets, liberation, and hell are all the same. It says here, swarga. Swarga, apavarga. Swarga, naraka. It's all the same. Because the devotees are only interested in the service of the Lord. So we may think, well, I'd rather serve inside the temple, serve in Los Angeles inside the temple in the deity department than to serve, go on Harinam in Watts, to go on Harinam in Harlem. We may think like that. But Lord Shiva is telling the devotees are equipoised, that because service means seeing the Lord. You can't serve someone you don't see. And you can't serve someone you don't feel and don't perceive. So seeing means perceiving. Seeing, perceiving, feeling. These are different levels of seeing. You see with your heart. You see with your mind. You see with your eyes. There's all different types of perception. So on one level or another, depending on the advancement of the bhakta or the devotee, he must perceive or see the Lord in order to render service. If there's no connection or contact with the Lord, then it's impossible. You can't serve an invisible master. And we say, oh yes, serve here. I want you to go serve this master. And they say, where is he? Well, you can't see him. Well, then how will I serve him? I can't see him. Well, you search him out. So Krishna, we're serving Krishna. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing about him, remembering him, worshipping him, because we're perceiving him. Either directly, at an advanced level, the devotee sees the Lord everywhere. In every instance. But even in a neophyte position, we perceive the existence of the Lord. And in that perception, we surrender. We perceive the Lord on some level, and we surrender to that experience, and we serve the Lord. And then we get some reciprocation. Yayetamam prapadyante. Now reciprocation appears as ras, although it's called rasabhas in the beginning. It's not really bhakti ras. It's bhakti rasabhas. It's a reflection. It's a glimmer of the actual taste of devotion at the level of bhava. But it drives us on. So Jiva Goswami gives a commentary in this verse, Narayana Praksarve, Nakutashchana Bibhyati. Devotees have the quality of seeing or experiencing, darshanaha, because this word is there in the verse, everything other than Narayan as worthless. Whether it's liberation, heaven, or hell. Because devotees accept or reject everything only on the basis of favorableness to the Lord. This is the standard of measurement for a bhakta. Will it be pleasing to the Lord? And that's the expression, the active principle behind the verse given by Rupa Goswami in his definition of Shuddha Bhakti, Uttam Bhakti. Anyabhilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadyanavritam, Anukulyena Krishnanu Shiranam Bhaktir Uttama. In the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he defines the subject. This is bhakti. What is bhakti? Well, this is the desirable bhakti, Uttam bhakti, topmost, Uttam. This is risen, Uto. It's risen, it's awake. It's fully awakened and developed. Topmost bhakti is Uttam bhakti. And it has its lakshana, Sarup and Tatastha lakshana, primary and secondary characteristics. So the primary characteristic is his Krishna Anukulya, Krishna Anukulyena. Anukulya means it's favorable. It's following his mood. It's following his heart. It's for him. Bhakti is for the Lord, of the Lord, and by the Lord. It's not for us. That's bhog. And bhakti is for him, for his pleasure. So he's saying that this is the standard of measurement that the devotee is seeing. Will this engagement favorable? Will this give pleasure to the Lord? Will this make the Lord happy, or will it make me happy? If we draw the conclusion that yes, this will make me happy, then it's not bhakti. It's selfishness. So this is the standard the devotee applies in any circumstance. Of course, we have to adjust it according to our level of surrender. Well, this will make the Lord a little happy, but also make me happy. So there's some approximated devotion in a neophyte level. Something for me, something for him. But the sterling example of the purest devotees are contained right here in Vrindavan. And that jewel of devotion is locked within the 10th canto. You have to earn the right to open that jewel box. You have to earn the right to open that jewel box. And Shukadeva Goswami requires one to go through 9 cantos. It's like a jewel box with 9 big padlocks on it. A big padlock. So you open one, then another one, and another one, another one. Finally, you open the 9 padlocks, and then you can lift up the lid. Acha. Krishna's Janma Utsav. Krishna's Janma Leela. Dasama Skanda, 10th canto. But the 9 padlocks locking that treasure of pure devotion, Uttam Bhakti, are the 9 cantos of Bhagavatam. So he doesn't just throw it at you. Here it is. Here's the diamond. He said, no. First, take some sand. Take some sand and compress it. Because a diamond is nothing but compressed sand. Sand comes to coal. Coal eventually becomes a diamond. Over a few million years. At least that's what the scientists say. They have this idea. So it requires lots of time and lots of compression. So whatever devotion we have when we approach Krishna, it's like, it's very grainy, it's sandy, it's gritty, it's crunchy. It's not very soft or smooth or fluid or attractive. It's rather Then we compress it and we round it out. First canto, second canto, anartha nivritti, nishta, ruchi. And then our devotion gets more and more presentable, more and more delectable, more and more attractive. As Krishna is attracting us at every moment, we gradually start to attract Krishna at every moment, depending on the purity of our presentation. So when our presentation is completely pure, Uttam Bhakti, then the Lord accepts everything we offer, gladly, happily, with a twinkle in his eye. Oh, this is for me? You have lovingly made this for me? You have lovingly offered this completely for me, without any ulterior motive, no separate agenda, no selfishness, selflessness. So that's why when you finally get to the treasure box of 10th canto, you find out about Braja Prem, Yashoda Prem, Nanda Prem, Sridham Prem, Subal Prem, Sakhi Ras, Madhurya Ras, Vatsali Ras. Then finally you move up the body of Krishna through the Bhagavatam. Then when you get to the 10th canto, you arrive at his face. Then if you want to enter his face, because you enter the heart through the face, and you enter the face through the mouth. So the mouth of the Bhagavatam, the smiling face of the Bhagavatam, is Rasa Panchadaya, the five chapters of the Rasa Dance. Because here, in the Rasa Panchadaya, you find out the heart of Krishna. The heart is expressed through the smile and through the eyes. So there, in Rasa Panchadaya, you find out the heart of Krishna is Radharani. Radharani is described there. And how selfless is her love, how deep is her love, how pure is her love. She is a perfect example of the definition of pure devotee. Pure devotion, uttam bhakti. She is the param 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 uttam bhakta. Because she, at every second, at every moment, she's anushilanam. She's acting and cultivating and moving and thinking and speaking and desiring and dreaming and hankering for the pleasure of Krishna. Anushilanam, moment by moment. Cultivating. Then Anukulyena, and it's all favorable for Krishna. Her anger is for Krishna's pleasure. Her man is for Krishna's pleasure. She has different moods, praying by chitya, man, everything. Seemingly unfavorable, but it's for favorable. On one level, it looks unfavorable. Radharani is upset with Krishna. She's pouting, she's sulking, she's playing contrary, hard to get. No, it's very favorable. Krishna loves it. He enjoys it immensely. The expression, the movements of her eyes, and so much joy it comes to Krishna. So Radharani only exists for this purpose. So devotees go anywhere. The word tulya, which is in this verse, tulya artha darshana, meaning one, is similar to the grammatical rule, rasabhyamna no na saman pare. He's quoting something from Panini. Some technicality. And then goes on. Next, Vishnu's commentary on the same verse, Narayana. Why should devotees be glorified above others? Devotees are fixed in Narayan and nothing else. This verse is explaining this. Not only Chitraketu, but also all devotees are fixed. Narayana Parat. Para sarve. Heaven, liberation, hell are all regarded as insignificant because they are not pleasing, being devoid of the happiness of bhakti. So devotees have the idea that if even heaven is hell if there's no service. If I was granted liberation to Swarga or even higher Buraloka or what to speak of Swarga, Janaloka, Maharaloka, if I have no opportunity to serve my Lord, then that promotion to that extraordinary planet of opulence and pleasure is hell. I don't want it. They have a phrase in English, they say, life without love is not worth living. Life without love is not worth living. It's an interesting play. Because love is what the soul is made of. It is its nature. The nature of the soul is to receive love and give love. So if you go to the heavenly planets and there is no Krishna, then they will be, for the devotee, he considers it hell. For the non-devotee, he thinks, this is great, this is heaven. For example, some people in this world, they think going to Las Vegas is heaven. You go to Las Vegas to the gambling casinos with a big wad of money in your pocket, a pile of dollars or a stack of rupees. I guess you have to use dollars over there. Rupees won't get too far in Las Vegas. And then you think, this is so wonderful. There's dancing girls here. There's music. There's all kinds of fine foods. And it's a very interesting thing in Las Vegas. They make the food and drinks very cheap. In fact, food is very, they have very, very exotic Tamasic Bogue. very, very exotic and wonderful tamasic bhog for the mlechas and yavanas that frequent these places. And it's a very low price. Meals are very cheap in Las Vegas. Because we had Sankirtan preaching center there for some time. I served there. Of course, I didn't eat any of that, but I was aware of the situation. And the other thing is, in these gambling casinos, they give free drinks. Because when you're drunk, you lose your discrimination. And you forget to count your money. Well, how much money did I have or do I have? So you become rather generous and liberal in spending in their machines, at their tables, with their odds. So you eat good, you get drunk and feel good, and blow all your money. This is their formula. So many people think this is heaven. And they repeatedly save up their money so they can go back and forth from their job. They go regularly to heaven. People, they work for 6 months, save up their money, then come back to Las Vegas, and they think it's heaven. But if you ask some devotee, would you like to go to heaven in Las Vegas? He'll say, that's hell. It's really hell. But if they say, oh, you can go there and distribute books. Oh, great, let's go. I can remember moving around inside the gambling casinos with a bag full of Bhagavatams, wearing a tuxedo. Yeah, because they think you're part of the club. No, not a tuxedo, white dinner jacket. It's like semi-formal. White silk dinner jacket, black pants, tie, purple shirt or whatever, blue shirt. And of course a wig. Now I don't need a wig. And then we say, oh, excuse me, you're having a good time? Oh, shut up. Who are you? Some people are so irritable because they're losing all their money. I said, listen, I have something very special for you. Oh, what is that? And you make some kind of special lines. It's a very mysterious book from the ancient cultures. People knew this, how to find the real success of life. This will teach you how to become fortunate and be a winner. key words, because they're trying to be a winner and they're trying to be successful. And then you explain psychology and all these things. And they say, okay, put it next to the slot machine. And then they ask you, will it give me good luck? I said, yes. Well, how much is it? It's only $10. Okay, $10. So then you would go around the casino and you see these Bhagavatams, Srimad Bhagavatams sitting next to these slot machines. So little did they know that they were going to find Krishna at the slot machines. Doing, doing, doing. These strawberries come up on the slot machine. Doing, doing, doing. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So this is the... go on to the next verse here. This is in other words, Rupa Goswami is giving reference here from Bhagavatam, 28 verses proving one point. That's like, imagine getting in a fight. Imagine getting in a fight with Bruce Lee. And he kicks you 28 times. Bruce Lee is a famous kung fu character. So one kick of the foot, whatever they call it, jab or whatever it's called, one kick, and you're finished. But he kicks you, knocks you down, and dom, 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 dom. 28 times, repeatedly. And you say, all right already, all right, uncle. Uncle, uncle, or what do you say, cha-cha, cha-cha, mama, mama. Uncle, uncle, I surrender. It's all over, you win, you're the champ. So somehow Rupa Goswami, he feels that this point is so important and so significant that devotees understand very clearly that there's no joy, there's no bliss in anything, liberation, any type of the five liberations, that can compare with the joy of serving the Lord, or even hearing about the Lord. It's a very passive form of service. Simply lend your ear, lend an ear. And Preeti Maharaj was saying, my Lord, I don't want anything. All I want is 10,000 ears so I can hear the glories, your glories, from the mouth of the devotees. So anywhere where a devotee is speaking, I'll be there. That's not a very active service. It's simply passive. Listening in the audience. So now we're hearing another, we've heard from Brichasura, we heard from Dhruva, we heard from this Shukadeva Goswami. Now we're hearing this verse is spoken by Indra in a more sober moment. Indra is often rather not very sober most of the time. He's usually busy engaging in various campaigns, wife-hunting campaigns, stealing the wives of various rishis. But now he's in a sober moment, and he's speaking in 6th Canto Bhagavatam. I believe maybe it's the same story of with Chitraketu, and yeah, same. Because Indra, of course, is fighting Brichasura and trying to kill him with the thunderbolt. Radhananam Bhagavat Ihamana Nirashisi Yetu Nechantya Piparam Te Swartakushala Smitaha. Lord Indra said, those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who do not desire any liberation, do not desire anything material from the Lord, and do not even want liberation, they are very expert in understanding what is actually beneficial to them. Sva-artha kushala smrita. Sva-artha, my own, what is art? What is the object, the objective, the valuable thing for me, sva-artha? And they've analyzed, so devotees are intelligent. They've analyzed, what is the best thing for me? What do I really need? What will really make me kushala or satisfied or happy? What will really fulfill me? What fulfillment? Will I get fulfillment from by material acquisition or promotion to higher planets? No, I've thought deeply about the matter and in a very existential way try to understand the very core of my being. What makes me tick? What makes me move? What makes me act? And I've realized that the only thing that's important is the service of the Lord. This is the only thing that's important. So Jiva Goswami, he has a brief commentary on one word. The word para means liberation. And Vishnu Chakravarti gives a brief commentary, and we'll close today's session on this. Because the word is there, param. It says, param te swarta kushala smrita. Param te swarta kushala smrita. The word param means moksha, or you say moksha in Hindi. Those who desire impersonal liberation while worshipping the Lord are ignorant of their own benefit, desiring something insignificant instead of the great ocean of bliss present before them. Devotees are satisfied with the superior qualities of their object of worship. Devotees are skillful in knowing what is in their best interest, swartha kushala. So some people, of course, they worship the Lord. They understand that the Lord is very munificent and very kind. And the worship of the Lord is not very difficult. So some people engage in worship, aradhanam. The verse is there, aradhanam bhagavata ihamana nirashisa shisha. Aradhanam, bhagavat aradhanam. Some people engage in Bhagavat Aradhanam, worshipping Bhagavan, but they want Brahman. They're interested in Brahman. And Vishnu says, this is not very intelligent. They're approaching the Lord and they're worshipping Him. Sometimes they do puja or archan. You see many of these Mayavadis. They have temples like our Akandanandanji. Akandanandanji was a very famous Advaitin scholar and personality of Vrindavan in the 60s. He has a very big ashram and he has a big library, very good library. And he has a temple, and inside the temple there's a murti of Gopal, Nritya Gopal, dancing Gopal. Very beautiful murti, actually. And they do this Seva Puja and Archan there with the idea that this is simply a transformation of Vikar, of Brahman. But Brahman is a little hard when the new students come to the Advaitin line. Say, now sit down and meditate on Brahman. And the students say, well, what is it? Well, it's nothing. It's It's all okay, nothing. And then their meditation becomes nothing and they fall asleep and they merge into nothingness. So they say, meditate on this murti, on this tribhanga, this tribhanga murti, because the mind usually seeks to hold on to some form. Because of samskaras, the mind or the chitta is full of samskaras. And the samskaras are previous mental impressions. We have so many impressions of form and taste. All the five sense objects are embedded in the chitta as samskaras. So within our mind, there are so many forms and so many tastes and so many taste sensations and so many fragrances. Gandha samskaras and sparsha samskaras and shabda samskaras and rasa samskaras. Like someone may be moving around here and there in a foreign country, then some smell comes in their nose. And that smell is like udipan, a stimulant, an excitant. Then that fragrance goes in the nose and registers in the mind. And then it's almost like a laser or something. It goes over the mind, then it finds a samskara. Oh, that smell reminds me of my mother's whole wheat bread. I always remember, it made a very deep impression on my mind because my mother would make bread every week. And so I was attached to that. Whatever you're attached to, the stronger the attachment, the deeper the samskara. So now I haven't smelled that smell for 20 years. Now I was walking down a street in Paris by a bakery. And they were making whole wheat bread. And, ding! So this is the interplay of samskaras. And then after the samskara is stimulated, then the vasana comes up. The desire. Oh yeah. Mommy, whole wheat bread, nourishment, satisfaction, love, security, this, da 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 da. And then the vasana rises up. Oh, I want some bread. You look around. Oh, bakery, whole wheat bread. And you go in and you buy it. And it's like this. It goes on like this. So, Vishnu is saying that people are worshipping, they're meditating on the deity, the Mayavadis, and then they realize they're Brahman, they throw the deity away or they keep it for the next generation. And he's saying the Mayavadis are worshipping, doing Bhagavat Aradhanam, they're worshipping the Lord, and it says they're ignorant of their own benefit. They're desiring, while worshipping the Lord, they're ignorant of their own benefit, desiring something insignificant instead of the great ocean of bliss present before them. So it's like, for example, if you go to Bill Gates, and Bill Gates has like oodles of money, he has like tons and tons of money. So you say, "Oh, Bill Gates, can you please give me 100 rupees?" You waited so long. You finally got an appointment. You've been doing Murti Puja, a little Murti of Bill Gates, and you've been praying to him and trying to please his associates and serving his servants and everything. And finally, they blessed you with darshan of Bill Gates. So when you got darshan, you say, "Oh, please, can I have 100 rupees? Are you stupid? You could ask for 100 crores or 100 lakhs, something significant. So Vishnu says the Mayavadis, they're worshipping the Lord who's the ocean of unlimited transcendental bliss. You know, Ananta Ananda Sagar. And then they're saying, "Oh, you know, can I have Sayuja Mukti? Can I merge into one of your molecules? Can I merge into one of your molecules?" How insignificant. You want to merge into one of the molecules of my effulgence because the Brahma Jyoti is made of jivas. So that means the Brahma Jyoti is a tej, the effulgence, the aura, the jyoti of the Lord. It's millions and unlimited trillions of jivas. So you want to merge into a molecule. You want to be a molecule of my light rays. How ridiculous. I could hold you to my bosom. I could take you to the spiritual world. You could dance with me. You could live with me forever. I have so many variegated pastimes. Vichitra lila. Adbhuta vichitra lila. Amazing variegated pastimes. But you simply want to merge into a molecule? You dingbat. You stupid. You puggle. So this is the humor that Vishnath is including here. Of course, it's slightly embellished. Vishnu Chakravarti Pahadaki Jai. So we'll continue with that tomorrow.